became very clear to me during that production why we need a union, why we have to be organized. Because when we're on our own, one person against, let's say, an unscrupulous producer, it's just you.
You could be a steel worker, an auto worker, a mine worker, and have a good life.
How can we push to keep our members safe if we are doing the same old stuff, going out and we're doing unsafe things by exposing ourselves and our staff?
They marched through the Federal Plaza, black workers from the south side of Chicago and white workers from Steger, Illinois.
The budget deficit stands at $15 billion in the middle of a health crisis like we've never seen.
They can make you non-union, decertify the union that's in your shop, keep the union out of your shop, take that union to court. They're proud of it. They are all about the Benjamins.
So after I looked over this week's show, our last for the year, I was going to talk about how it's kind of a holiday sampler with something for everyone. But honestly, that's true of every show. There are now 80 different shows in the Labor Radio Podcast Network, way more than we could possibly sample each week. So what the weekly team does is listen to as many of the shows as we can each week, flag those that seem especially timely or interesting, and then go through a process of editing those shows and seeing how they fit together. And how, even though each show is distinct and operates pretty much completely independently, we can use clips from some of the shows to tell a story about what we as a network of shows focused on working people's lives and struggles, about what some of those voices were saying at this particular moment in time. What that means is that each edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly is absolutely unique, and our hope is that you find this sampling of some of those shows and voices is as fascinating and inspiring as we do. Now, for this week's show, we've got an interview with actor and strong union member Alan Alda from the SAG-AFTRA podcast. Then, Georgetown University professor and Working Class Perspectives contributor Sherry Lincoln talks with America's Workforce Radio about how the working class has been affected by the pandemic. No end-of-year show would be complete without, well, an end-of-year show. So, from the Break Time Breakdown, Jeremy, Mark, Jason, and Richard get together to chat about all things 2020 at Sheet Metal Workers Local 110. From Black Work Talk, one of the newest members of the network, host Stephen Pitts welcomes Greg Kelly, president of SCIU Healthcare Illinois, who discusses how COVID has affected union members' efforts to build racial solidarity within the union and linking the work of his union with the mission of black freedom. This is also traditionally a time when we look to the year ahead, and on Union Strong, the New York State AFL-CIO's legislative director reviews Labor's 2021 legislative agenda in that state, including protections for essential workers and support for all workers who continue to suffer as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. One of my favorite things about our Labor Radio Podcast Network is the chance it gives me to learn about local struggles I probably wouldn't otherwise know about. Thanks to the My Labor Radio podcast, we'll literally go to the streets of Fort Wayne, Indiana, to hear about the ongoing battle by the Fort Wayne Philharmonic musicians for respect and a contract. Throughout today's show, you're going to hear poems from novelist, poet, and singer-songwriter A.S. Coomer, who's brought to us by the Blue Collar Gospel Hour, a podcast hosted by union auto worker and activist Dan Denton, who also happens to be a poet. I'm Chris Garlock, and that's all ahead on today's Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, bringing you working people's voices with a selection of highlights from the Labor Radio Podcast Network. And just a reminder, all the shows you hear sampled today are available in full on our website at laborradionetwork.org, where you'll also find all 80 network members. Okay, here's the show.
Thank you. everybody. I'm Gabrielle Carteras, president of SAG-AFTRA, and I want to welcome you to the SAG-AFTRA podcast. I am presently in New York, and I've just completed a great interview with Alan Alda. So I hope you enjoy, and here's Alan Alda. Congratulations to being the recipient of the 55th Life Achievement Award for SAG-AFTRA. It was wonderful. Wonderful to see you receive it, and it's an honor to be with you here today.
Oh, thank you.
MASH was that show that almost spoke truth to war, right? Mm. It wasn't the glorified, you guys had fun in it, and it was all great, but there was that sense, it taught us that war is about fear, and it's about...
And pain. Dismemberment and death.
Right.
And because of the setting, you couldn't escape that. You could escape it if you chose to. And the network in the beginning wanted us
to avoid...
the mayhem,
mm-hmm.
you know, just have fun
right.
while these guys are dying. You know, none of us wanted to do that. But that gave us a chance, and I think that's one of the things that made the show successful, mm-hmm. is that we were telling the stories of people who had really lived.
Right.
And it was as funny as we could be, but we didn't leave out
the truth,
the hard parts.
Right, the heart of it.
Yeah. And the recognition that you don't have life mm-hmm. without death.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is no such thing in the universe, or that we know of anyway, not on this planet.
Right.
So it's the chance to have both of those elements in the stories.
This has been a great interview, but I know that we're going to be coming up to an end. I do want to say something I said to you earlier, because I really want you to hear this.
What?
We're in an action right now with BBH. Mm-hmm. This is regarding commercials. And you taking a stand in supporting the union and the members
yeah.
regarding BBH, the action we have, putting your name to that, has meant so much to the members.
Oh, that's nice.
It's really, I think it really speaks to the, you know, being in a union, even though as actors, you know, it's our contracts or whatever, but there is a brother sisterhood
sure.
that goes on. We're here to take care of each other. And you really stepped up and leaned in. And I had to say it out loud to you.
Well, thank
so you.
Let me return it. As a young actor, I was doing a play in Italy with my father when I was in my early 20s. And it was a very interesting experience because the producer was an Italian. We were doing the play in English,
mm-hmm.
but it was an Italian production company.
Mm-hmm.
And we would get paid in cash every night after the performance.
At a different time.
And that was the habit there because
right.
if you waited till the end of the week, you might not be able to find the producer.
Wow.
And if you didn't have a guarantee of a way to fly home, you might not be able to leave. You have to go on your own steam. It became very clear to me during that production why we need a union,
right.
why we have to be organized, because when we're on our own, one person against an unscrupulous or,
right.
Let's say an unscrupulous producer, it's just you.
That's right. It's the collective voice. It is.
Yeah.
And that is actually what people really, I think that you help to bring the collective voice together by speaking up. Because when people look at you, they do remember you from a part of their lives. They've seen all the different body of work and they're saying, he's not so big that he's not speaking with us.
Yeah.
He's saying that he's a part of us. And in that feeling of being a part of community, it gives strength. So I wanted you to know that.
Well, I'm glad for you that you dedicate so much of your life to this, too.
I love our membership. It's been an honor to be able to serve.
You know, we work very hard to learn how to be artists. And then we have to operate in a business environment.
Right.
And the business environment, although it's called show business, is run mostly by people who are interested in the business part of it. And we're just one of the commodities that make up the product that they sell. When they started calling movies product, I thought we were in trouble.
Right. And sometimes we are.
Yeah.
I think that we're in a really good place as a union. The merging of SAG-AFTRA was really important.
Yeah. We always knew that we were there for something bigger than ourselves.
Right.
And that made a big difference.
Well, you have made an incredible difference. If, you know, the responsibility, my mom used to say, of every generation is to make a difference.
Yeah.
And you have made a profound difference.
Well, thank you
so
very much.
It's such an honor to have you here, and you. Congratulations, you are great.
Thank you.
Welcome to another edition of the Blue Collar Gospel Hour. I am your host, Dan Denton. Today's episode is with one of my very good friends, a man that I have traveled thousands of miles with across the country, performing poetry while he also read poetry and played music.
The writer, the poet, the singer-songwriter, all the way from Kentucky, my friend A.S. Coomer.
I'm going to read a couple poems from this book that came out called Masks Still Aren't Enough. It's a book of ephrastic poetry based on the art of Marcel Hermes. He's this Dutch artist who's incredible. So this poem I wrote is called Blue Moon Over Kentucky. I am screaming, as mad as the beast attached to me. What Stygian, Frankensteinian neophyte cleaved back the walls of my flesh and stitched this treacherous darkness onto me? Who was playing God with such a weak hand? There, the hateful dull eyes of rage unexpressed, and there, the baleful luminance of red rims simmer, and lo, the howling. Peel back the structure, the form, unfetter the terminology, words woven, words weaved, nothing serene, nothing left whole or clean, and you can hear it, the barking wildness of the poet, running wild as wild dogs through the barren fields and unattainable dreams. Dancing under that blue moon, hung like a jury, hung like a painting askew, hung like a broken sickle over Kentucky.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferentz.
Sherry Lincoln worked in Youngstown State University for many years and worked with her husband, John Russo, as co-director of the Working Class Studies program. And now she's at Georgetown University. This is a good kickoff to your blog, Rethinking Working Class and Belonging. Let's get into what happened here.
You know, I mean, both the housing bubble and the pandemic are examples of things that hit the working class. And, you know, they're already not whole, is the best way to put it. When you think about it, the number of people who can't afford a $500 or $600 emergency. And all of that reflects the ways that what it means to be working class, which used to be not only about belonging in a neighborhood where you lived a long time and in a union with people you work side by side with all the time and staying connected to family because you could stay in the community where you were born and raised. All of those forms of belonging which provide support and make it possible for people to have a good life even if they're not making a huge income. But in many cases, those things also brought a reasonably comfortable way of life for a good portion of the 20th century. You could be a steel worker, an auto worker, a mine worker, and have a good life. And all of that has become much more at risk. And, you know, some of it goes back to economics and the kinds of work that replaced those good industrial jobs. Some of it goes back to the decline in unions, which lost power and then lost people. And with that, lost some of that sense of mutual care and community that helped people get through tough times and gave them the strength to stand up when things weren't going well. And mm-hmm. ended up putting a whole swath of America at economic and social risk so that when we hit a housing bubble or when we hit a pandemic, lots and lots of people are really vulnerable. And I think that's what we're seeing this year. And I think that vulnerability carries over from the practical day-to-day stuff to a sense of feeling unappreciated, unconnected, unrecognized within our society. And that can then lead to all kinds of resentment, which helps to shape our politics. One of the challenges that I think working class culture faces and has for a very long time, I mean, historians trace this back at least to the 19th century, is that we've divided who is us and them within the working class along racial lines. And what's interesting about that today is that I think we see that that whole issue that we were talking about before of resentment and people feeling like people like them are not valued in American society, we actually see that on both sides of a racial boundary. So as we've seen over the last 4 years, white supremacist groups have become much more vocal and much more visible and in some ways more violent in this country. And that is a version of belonging, and not all of that, but there is some piece of that that is tied to class. At the same time, we also have seen a growth in a kind of a sense of shared identity among people of color, black people in particular, in cities. Not that that didn't exist before, but that sense of we are not valued and respected by the rest of society, and in particular, not valued and respected by the police. Now, I will say one of the most hopeful signs I saw this year were the Black Lives Matter protests that happened in the summer after George Floyd was killed, and the number of white people who came out for those protests, much more than has happened in any of the previous ones. So that gives me a bit of hope that we are, in fact, able to overcome some of those us-them boundaries. It's hard. It doesn't happen very often. I hate to think that people have to get killed for it to happen, but you know, I think we have to be finding those moments.
Well, Sherry, you take care. Thank you so much for joining us, and let's talk in the new year. How's that sound?
That sounds good. Merry Christmas.
Take care.
Bye.
Once again, Sherry Lincoln on behalf of Working Class Perspectives.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a Blue Collar Gospel Hour. I am your host, Dan Denton. I am here with my good friend, the writer, the poet, the singer-songwriter, all the way from Kentucky, my friend A.S. Coomer.
This one is called Demonic Psalmody. I've lived harder than I'd care to admit, but there it is. And isn't the release of the beast of burden thought worth the weight of the response? Now, I don't believe in guardian angels. There ain't a goddamn one of them dancing on the head of my pen. But goddamn it if I ain't been lucky. Lucky to be alive. To still have people that I can look in the eyes without the sense of shame that keeps me forever burning the midnight oil. Among other things, I stumbled onto a sandwich baggie of tiny devils in an antique mall in the Glass City. Didn't realize I'd lost my wallet until I got to the register, but a kind woman footed the cloven-hoofed bill. It's good to have somebody watching your back, even if it is the devil.
I'm going to do the official start here in a second, and we'll just start at the beginning of the year, some of these early things, and just have a discussion about what any thoughts that you guys have about any of this stuff as we go through, as we list it out. So thanks for joining me, guys, on the show or on this meeting. We're doing a 2020 recap, just a year in review of what we all were working through and working with throughout throughout 2020, dealing with a pandemic that kind of threw I wouldn't even call it a curveball, it threw us into a whole new game. We're in the middle of playing checkers and they throw us into a battleship, a game of battleship. So anyway, yeah, so 2020 was pretty crazy for everybody, not just us. Local 110 wasn't anything special. Everybody, union, non-union, trades in all walks of life all around the world had to figure out new ways to conduct their business. What's interesting is when I mentioned this to you guys about putting this together and doing a year in review, for 2020, the reaction I got from all you guys was, geez, what did we do? Because it seemed we were tied in so many ways. But when you look back, we really had a pretty big year. We had a pretty big year.
Got a lot accomplished. We did. We got a lot accomplished in Local 110. And that's everybody. That's the membership. That's us. That's the health fund. That's the education fund. Not just us. We're just kind of talking about some of the accomplishments. But there was a lot done within Local 110.
Yeah.
And the members stayed working. Members stayed working. They were essential workers. And there was not a job that we didn't man. So, they really stepped up and did it.
A lot of stuff that we had to deal with, we had to do old reoccurring stuff, jobs in the middle of nowhere, and just our everyday business. But we still had a social distance. We were wearing our masks. It was like harder to meet up with people, because part of what we do as a union is we're in the business of protecting our workers and protecting all workers, pushing for worksite safety procedures and regulations, stuff like that. It's what we fight for. And how could we go out? I was just talking to an organizer up in Local 33, and his perspective was, how can we push to keep our members safe if we are working like doing the same old stuff, going out and we're doing unsafe things by exposing ourselves and our staff to the virus by conducting business as usual? You just can't do it. So we would be hypocrites if we're fighting our companies to provide masks, provide safe working conditions, and then we're out having one-on-one meetings with people in enclosed rooms while we're not practicing what we preach type stuff. So we really had to be diligent too with the way we conducted our own business.
And everybody gave up this year. The activities took a big hit. We canceled everything on activities. We couldn't do the picnic. We couldn't do the Christmas party. We couldn't do the Labor Day parade.
The fishing.
There was a lot of stuff we couldn't do.
Fishing derby. Yeah.
Yep, fishing derby.
Once the virus is under control, maybe we can do gatherings where we can get the team together to go out and go on hikes and stuff like that. Some good stuff should be coming down the road. Because of what we created here, all the normal business got handled. We did new business, all while having our hands tied.
Bring on 2021.
Amen, brother. Bring it on.
I'm ready. All right, guys. Thanks for taking some time out to join me. If anybody else has any final stuff you want to throw in, go ahead.
Merry Christmas, and y'all, everybody have a safe, happy new year.
Yep, Merry Christmas, right. Happy new year.
Safe
Merry too, Christmas. I'll be seeing y'all later. All right.
All right. Wear your masks. Stay safe, everybody.
Wear your mask.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a Blue Collar Gospel Hour. I am your host, Dan Denton. I am here with my good friend, the writer, the poet, the singer-songwriter, all the way from Kentucky, my friend A.S. Coomer.
This one's called Burdan and Roanoke, or Miles Davis for French film. She's in a junkie's jacket and a borrowed car, ducked out on the tab at the diner and left the state to raise the kids. Skipped off north, snowed in and tucked away, hidden at the corner of Burdan and Roanoke. Spitting blood from a lifetime of nightlife, dying from 34 years of slow suicide, coming in soft and low. Miles Davis for French film. A penchant for hits, or a pinch hitter for a pinch, a squeeze, followed closely by a freebie, not a handout. I guess she earned it. Griping about the high life in an obscure dialect of old English, the needle and the damage done, singing how can the night be over when the party hasn't even really begun. Daylight signifying nothing more than a need for more comfortable environs. Mystical check hovering above and just ahead. The mythical shroud of paid off, of the easy days. Forever bug-eyed and waiting for more. A fresh wave of Xanax blue or China white to lift her up. The chariot's plush against her aching, weary bones. Into the realm of the eternal. Holy, holy, hebetudinous visions of God and grandeur, beauty and destiny, sickly sweet heaven, and snowbound, languorous hell. Happy days, uninterrupted. Yet she remains, for today at least, but just until the check comes in. Sing it with her, but just until the check comes in.
Hey, folks. This is Stephen Pitts, host of Black Work Talk, an organizing upgrade podcast. Here we take a look at efforts around the country to build the collective power of Black workers. When I think of these dueling themes, human suffering from COVID, human acts of solidarity against racism, I think about the Maya Angelou poem, Still I Rise. Often the poem is recited as an affirmation of individuals declaring they will overcome obstacles stacked before them. But today, I think of the collective us, overcoming barriers. We rise because we have each other. We rise because we come together to beat back the barriers built by a system of racial capitalism. We rise because we have what last week's guest, Tanya Walls Goulburn, said, joyous militancy. So this show is about going through the fire of COVID. And here, COVID is just a metaphor for so much evil we saw in 2020 and coming through that fire stronger. We will talk with Greg Kelly, president of SEIU Healthcare Illinois. So I know a couple, maybe 5 years ago or so, SEU took a big stance around racial justice and stuff and did more activism around that. You began to mention how people could identify, though they weren't Black exactly. Can you tell me some of the actual steps you took to try to bring the idea of centering Black workers, the idea of racial justice being at the center, take it to Downstate, Illinois, other parts of your territory that not have a lot of Black folks there necessarily?
It's a great question. So Trayvon Martin, his murder, really got the ball rolling, if you will. But it was the murder of Mike Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, that really put it all on overdrive. We have a lot of members in St. Louis. We have members that worked in nursing homes in Ferguson. And given where it's situated, in terms of Illinois, we have a lot of members in that Metro East, which is just across, literally across the river from St. Louis, which is Ferguson. So our members like demanded that we get involved and that we fight on behalf of Mike Brown and against brutality. And so we took a leap, led by a lot of our young members, and said, we've got to do this, folks. And really, it just started with a conversation. And so we regularly meet with our members. We engage with our members. It's important to us that our members lead engaging conversations with other members. And so it was, I think, a lot of training, a lot of risk, a lot of challenge, really, around getting our members to think beyond just their existence and understand that really it is going to be us coming together, fighting together, that's going to make things better for everyone, and that we can't win economic justice without winning racial justice. So we did a lot of work, a lot of training, a lot of meetings, and I think the overwhelming majority of our members got it.
And I have this little pet theory that says that the best place to develop better racial relations is inside of a union, because you both fight the boss on a regular basis and you're different. But because we fought together, I know you don't have no tail. I halfway trust you.
That's right.
Let me hear your story. And all of a sudden, there's some possibilities there. So I wonder, man, given the work you did prior to 2020 around racial justice, and some people came on board, some people dragged a little bit, obviously. Did anybody have a light bulb moment turn on and all of a sudden not get what you're talking about in 2020? Folk might have been white helping this race stuff. I don't get it. All of a sudden, oh, that's what you mean. Just wondering.
Oh, yeah. This was a lot of that. Again, the limitations of communicating with folks via Zoom and so forth, it really is, there are limitations to it. But one of the most exciting things that happened during the strike that ended just a couple of weeks ago, is that we had a nursing home down in a rural part of the state. Those workers actually came to Chicago for a press event we had. Majority of the workers in Chicago area are Black, but a number of immigrant workers, very few white workers, but quite a few of our worker members down in Moments, Illinois, they're white workers, and I'm sorry, in Steger, Illinois, but they came up to Chicago on a Saturday for a press event that we had. And to see the camaraderie was something you couldn't have written it better. One of those workers came and spoke at the event, but she brought like three carloads of folks up and they marched through the Federal Plaza, Black workers from the south side of Chicago and white workers from Steger, Illinois. And it hit them all so heavy, and it's not, you could just feel it there. But then, of course, after the action, we had our daily check-in, teletown halls, and to hear them talk to each other about their experience, that experience was something I won't forget. Just workers who don't know each other. Only thing they had in common was the work that they do and what they were trying to get. But they were just so excited to be in motion with each other, and I'll never forget that.
That's a powerful story, man. That's a really powerful story. Thanks for jumping on Black Work Talk. I really appreciate it, man.
Honored to be here and good to talk with you.
And be well.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a Blue Collar Gospel Hour.
I am your host, Dan Denton.
I am here with my good friend, the writer, the poet, the singer-songwriter, all the way from Kentucky, my friend A.S. Coomer.
This one is called I'm Not Sure How I Feel About the Sound. And this poem was picked to be, it won the Thelma's Prize, which Catfish McDarius judged. It's like a short story in a poem. It's a weird one. I'll read it. I'm not sure how I feel about the sound. Can't no one love you better than I did? All these years, all these nights bright with fulfilled longing, captured desire and twisted sheets, to the teeth with a big, fat love, bursting at the seams, dripping with it, slicker than any backcountry road post-summer downpour, juicier than any peach you've tasted. Now, it's just a picture of the thing. The train's whistle blowing right by our house, what used to be our house. It used to make you snuggle closer, something so lonesome in the cry. I was always just glad it was crying. Seemed like somebody somewhere had to be. And that's what my grandmother always said. And the result? Now that you're gone, even the coffee pot don't look right. Sitting cockeyed on the counter, beached by grains of stale, clumpy sugar and sticky spots where I spilled the milk. Baby, I don't even know why I bother to pay the electric bill. I keep all the lights off now that you're gone. Don't see the point in seeing the spaces where you ain't, because baby, you ain't. And I remember sitting in that back room down at the bar, swaying to the slide guitar and the gentle finger picking, putting them away with you. Baby, we could really put them away, couldn't we? And with an arm draped around your shoulder, I swore I would never write a song like that. I swore I would never write a song like this. The troubadour up there telling the story, his story, one you've heard 100 times, you've heard it once. But hearing him, you knew it was true all the same, and you couldn't help but move along. Just some unaware passenger picked up and carried off by the flash flood, the rising waters of it all. Each of us dripping, swimming in our own way, because either you swim or you drown. And we laughed. Sure, we knew I'd never write that song, a song like that, like this, because I wouldn't have to, because you would always be here, because we would always be together. Hear that? Trains coming on down the line, and for the first time in my life, I'm not sure how I feel about the sound.
The New York State AFL-CIO. I'm Darcy Wells, and this is Union Strong. The 2021 legislative session in New York State is scheduled to begin in a matter of weeks. And as of right now, there are 60 days of meetings planned for what could be described as one of the most challenging sessions in recent memory. The budget deficit stands at $15 billion in the middle of a health crisis like we've never seen. People have lost their jobs, are struggling to pay for housing and put food on their tables. Essential workers continue to put their own lives at risk to provide services. And workers sickened with COVID are still fighting for benefits. The people of New York State will be looking to lawmakers for help. The New York State AFL-CIO just released our 2021 legislative agenda, which addresses the needs of working people now and into the future. And joining me on the phone to talk about labor's priorities going into the new session is the legislative director of the New York State AFL-CIO, Mike Neidel. Mike, how are you?
I'm great, Darcy. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Clearly, the impact of this pandemic is on everyone's mind. Can you start there? What are our priorities related to COVID?
Sure, Darcy. The health and safety of workers is the primary concern for all unions. And the pandemic has put this at the centerpiece of our legislative agenda moving forward next year, both specific to COVID, but also future infectious diseases. We now know, despite this being the worst health crisis we've ever experienced, leading up to this, we had SARS, we had avian flu, we had an Ebola scare. So this is now something that occurs occasionally that we need to be prepared for. The first thing we're doing for health and safety is improvements of workers' compensation system and trying to smooth out or remove the hurdles in the system that delay the payment of benefits. We've got a couple of bills out there that would do that for workers, particularly essential workers, but all workers who get sick as a result of being at work, to make sure they're getting their medical care and any wage replacement if they're out so they can pay their bills while they're sick, instead of having to wait for the weeks or months or even longer to get that funding. And also for workers who have passed away, their families get death benefits through the workers' compensation system, but often have to go through systematic hurdles in order to get those benefits, hearings and other things. So we want to, at least for COVID, try to speed up the payment of those benefits. A second really important piece is the New York Heroes Act. That's a bill that builds on something we passed earlier this year in the public sector. And the New York Heroes Act would add to the private sector very similar protections that we got. And what it would do is create a statewide template that all employers would have to follow if an infectious disease outbreak occurs, like we're having now with COVID. Mm-hmm. And it would set a standard of required personal protective equipment like face masks or shields where appropriate. It would establish social distancing procedures and related staffing policies that employers should implement, like maybe doing staggered shifts or staggered days to limit exposure, as well as proper disinfecting and ventilation systems so that workers can know that they're going to work with the least chance of getting sick. So those are several of the proposals that we're working on to enhance the safety and health of workers throughout this pandemic, but also for future infectious disease outbreaks.
Thanks for listening to the Union Strong podcast. If you like what you're hearing, you can subscribe and give us a rating. This has been a production of the New York State AFL-CIO. Our president is Mario Salento. Our secretary treasurer is Terry Melvin. We're a federation of 3,000 unions representing 2.5 million union members, retirees, and their families with one goal: to raise the standard of living and quality of life of all working people. We keep New York State Union strong by fighting for better wages, better benefits, and better working conditions. For more information on the labor movement in New York, visit nysaflcio.org. Until next time, stay union and stay strong. We'll be right back.
That was music recorded on Wednesday, December 16th, performed by Philharmonic members who were standing on the corner of East Main Street and South Clinton outside the courthouse green. They were part of the protest, letting passersby on the road know about the poor treatment the Fort Wayne Philharmonic musicians are receiving right now from the Fort Wayne Phil. The musicians of the Fort Wayne Philharmonic are represented by Local 58 of the American Federation of Musicians, and that's their bargaining agent. So let's talk about the legal representation for these two groups. Barrett McNagney in Northeast Indiana is by far one of the most anti-union legal team. They're bragging on their website about why they do what they do for businesses, and they can make you non-union, decertify the union that's in your shop, keep the union out of your shop, take that union to court. They're proud of it. They are all about the Benjamins. They're all about the big money taking care of those corporations, and that is anti-working family and anti-labor. That's Barrett McNagney. That's who's carrying the ball for the Fort Wayne Philharmonic management team as they try to hurt the union members. The musicians in the 2013 season accepted a concessionary contract which reduced the core full-time musicians' session length from 40 weeks to 33 weeks. That's about 17.5% reduction in wages. They had accepted these wage cuts at a time when the Philharmonic was carrying a $2.5 million deficit. Now, that deficit has been erased, and the musicians want to return to the lost weeks and get their wages back. My name is Mark, and I'm the host of the show, and I spent some time with these musicians and have talked to quite a few of them about their current situation, many of which have been full-time musicians for quite a while in Fort Wayne and are very committed to be musicians in this Fort Wayne Philharmonic. No matter what the highs and lows are, they love being here in the Fort Wayne Philharmonic. So let's fast forward to today, which is Christmas time 2020, and the actions taken by the Fort Wayne Philharmonic against its musicians. They're using the pretext of COVID-19 pandemic to suggest that the Philharmonic does not intend to continue to maintain and operate a full-time professional orchestra in Fort Wayne and Northeast Indiana, as it has done for over 35 years. They've decided to throw in the towel because they want to take away the collective bargaining agreement.
Every dollar you donate to the Philharmonic is going to pay the executive salaries, and it's going for them to hire outside artists to come in and play private concerts for their big donors instead of to the musicians and instead of to our community.
So they're bringing scab musicians from across state lines to come in here?
Yes, they're bringing in soloists from around the country. Fortunately, a lot of the soloists have canceled and in support of us, but not all of them have done so.
Right.
This one's called Spit on My Grave.
That's it for this edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. It's our roundup of highlights from nearly 80 labor radio shows and podcasts. The Labor Radio Podcast Network shows focus on working people's issues and concerns, and we've got links to all the network shows at laborradionetwork.org, including, of course, complete versions of all the shows you heard today. And you can also find them by using the hashtag Labor Radio Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our music this week was Walter Brick's Symphonic Suite in A Minor, Opus 25, performed by the Fort Wayne Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Andrew Constantine. And that's A.S. Coomer singing Don't Spit on My Grave, as performed on the Blue Collar Gospel Hour podcast. Labor Radio Podcast Weekly was edited by Patrick Dixon and Evan Papp, produced by myself, and our social media guru, as always, is Harold Phillips. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Labor Radio Net. Find out more on our website, laborradionetwork.org. Also, check out our weekly live stream show available at Labor Radio Net on Facebook and Labor Radio Podcast Network YouTube. You'll also find profiles of members of the network. For Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, this has been Chris Garlock urging you stay active and, of course, stay tuned to your local Labor Radio Podcast show. See you next week.
Now won't you bring those black clouds along? Let's buy full sun. Where he had his chains to shine. So won't you please bring them black clouds along. Go bring them along.